This episode powered by our friends at Strive Labs and the Strive Hub platform, the all-in-one customer relationship management platform built for health and wellness, providing intelligent solutions for clinics and hospitals. Find them online at strivelabs.com.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, so the next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Wanted to thank everybody for helping us get to 100,000 downloads. That only happens when you guys share the show online via social media, the Twitter at PT Pintcast or Facebook, or just by telling a friend. As the great podcaster Adam Carolla says, telling a friend goes a long way. So thank you guys for helping us get there. Today on the show, an orthopedic PT who likes to science the shit out of things. A PhD in biochemistry from Albert Einstein College of Medicine, an MS in physiology and biophysics from Albert Einstein, an MS in PT from the Texas Women's University at Houston, started teaching at Texas Women's, then on to Chapman University, then to Marymount University, where she is the current chair of the program. Also on the NEXT program planning committee for the last 5 years, and she publishes outcomes following orthopedic surgeries, childhood obesity, and has written 2 book chapters, one on physiology of tissue healing, the other on physiologic adaptations in response to exercise. And a recent speaker at the Educational Leadership Conference with Innovations in Teaching, Learning Outside the Classroom, How to Use Technology to Your Advantage, my advisor. Finally on the show.
The most important job, your advisor.
Dr. Sky Donovan. Yeah, the most important job is being my advisor. So thanks for coming on the show.
Of course, I've been waiting.
I know. So I asked you first to be on the podcast, and you said no, but you had a good answer. Do you remember what your answer was, why you said no at first?
I think I remember what my answer was.
All right, you give your answer, I'll give mine.
I thought it was such an amazing idea that you had that I didn't want to make it seem non-legitimate by having someone from your own university
right.
be on the podcast.
You were like, I will, just not now. And then I thought about it. I was like, all right, I kind of get it. Like, if I'm just sitting here interviewing my professors, how's that getting outside of my
right.
comfort zone or,
right.
or my box or you know,
we're
looking
easy
around.
Sells, you know?
Right. So eventually, so I've had Kelly Negley, who's a professor at Marymount. She came on a couple episodes ago to talk about one of the patients that we had in Costa Rica. And we've got some exciting news about that patient that she was on the episode for. So I want you to help break the news.
Well, thanks in large, Jimmy McKay and PT Pintcast. They have raised enough money to not only buy the wheelchair, but ship the wheelchair and go to Costa Rica to deliver it in person, as
yeah.
they should.
We didn't think about that whole shipping thing. We're like, how much does a wheelchair cost? It costs this. Great, we just got to raise that. It was like, well, customs and shipping, and, you know, we wanted to put some stickers on it and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so. I mean, it was unanticipated, but you got down, got to the task, and did what you needed to do. I mean, you didn't let any barriers stand in your way, which is exemplary. So, you know, kudos to you for doing that.
It was like any which way but loose. We're like, all right, so how are we going to raise the money? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just going to ask a bunch of people on Twitter. Great. We're going to get some Con Ed courses for some amazing PTs. Donated those. Great. We got some donations that way. We're going to sell some tea. It was like really just like just MacGyvered the crap out of it. We also want to thank Marymount University for donating a lot of money. We had we started together a 5K last year that benefits the trip that we just went on. In case you don't know which patient I'm talking about, we have a service learning trip to Costa Rica and met a pediatric patient, male, 18 years old, muscular dystrophy, doesn't have a power wheelchair, so he sits in his chair all day, and he's the happiest kid you'll ever meet in your life. So we came back from our trip, decided that's not acceptable. PT decided that's not acceptable, and you guys rallied. And the thing that got me was so many people donated online. And they donated, there's a button you can click before donating to donate anonymously. And a lot of those came in, and I want to say thank you to those people. I knew who they are, because they came to me, their names came to me, but on the website it says anonymous, so I want to thank those people. And I'm not going to reveal who you are, obviously you just wanted to do the right thing, and I'm not going to blow up your spot. But I wanted to thank those people, because now we are able to ship this wheelchair. And I said, you know, you don't want to just throw money around. We raised a lot of money to go on our service learning trip via the 5K that we put on, and the reason we decided to buy this wheelchair is that wheelchair is going to change his second-to-second existence.
Exactly.
It's not just we're just throwing money around just to spend money. This is going to change this kid's day, his life. I'm pretty excited to now, for the first time on this podcast, say we've hit that goal and we're going to buy this kid a wheelchair. So I'm pumped.
Well, I think, you know, what you underestimate is the power that you have over people with your podcast. You went down there. You saw him. You speak from the heart. You're honest. So you came back and said, I can't go on another moment without helping this kid. And people have heard through your podcast, even if they haven't met you personally, you speak the truth. Plenty of physical therapists, friends of physical therapy, are willing to throw money at something that's worth it.
Right.
And, you know, you gave this child a voice. So we're thankful for you bringing that to our attention, because all too often we want to donate, but it doesn't go to the right places. So this is something that people can feel good about. And literally, as soon as it's delivered, it's going to make a difference, like you said.
Yeah, we're pumped. So the want to thank the company Permobile, our professor, neuroprofessor Kelly Negley, as we mentioned before. She does a lot of wheelchair fittings. So she's working with these companies, and she said, we're going to buy this kid a wheelchair. We want to get him a legit chair. We're not going to give him something that's going to fall apart in a couple months, in a couple years. I want something that's going to last for this kid. And she said, look, I deal with this one company. They're kind of seen as the BMW of wheelchairs. They're built like a tank. So I want to thank the guys from Permobile, a guy by the name of Rudy, who kind of helped us out in navigating this. And, you know, the prices are steep. These are legit pieces of medical equipment. But you know what I noticed? Permobile listened to our story. They gave us a price. We told them a little more about G. That price fell a little bit. And then we had Rudy went out to Costa Rica and actually met G, did a little sizing. And Rudy, all of a sudden, you know, the price came down a little more. So it was like, oh yeah, they're getting a little more buy-in. So really want to thank those guys for helping us out. And once we deliver that chair, we're going to share the news there. So first question, always the hardest. What are we drinking tonight?
Well, I'm kind of a one-trick pony, but you know, when you find something good, you stick with it. So I'm Guinness. You know, right. I drank it all through Ireland and Scotland. It's not the same here in the U.S., but right. But I keep giving it another try, hoping that it's going to taste like it does in Great Britain. But love me some Guinness.
Love me some Guinness. I'm going Guinness as well. I find when I drink Guinness, I don't drink as much, which is good because we got board prep coming up.
Well, it's good for you. It has iron in it.
It's got iron. Look, yeah. You're the PhD in biochemistry. If you tell me Guinness is good for me, I'm going to drink Guinness. So
that's
cheers.
What the advertising says, so it's got to be true.
Cheers to you. My goodness, my Guinness.
That's right.
All right, so invited you on the show, especially now, because this is an important week. It's Monday of graduation week. I'm going to graduate, I think, right? I mean, you'd be the one to tell me if I wasn't, Nate, right?
I'm sure you know it down to the hours, minutes, and seconds of when that's
got
all going to happen. But, and yes, going to graduate with flying colors.
All right, great, because you would be the one to break the bad news.
Well, there was something I didn't really want to bring up until now.
So the reason I wanted you to come on is because I sat there thinking, look, you know, you've got speeches. We've all been to high school graduation, undergrad, various degrees. We've heard people talk at graduation, and I figured, hey, look, this was a student project that I started, and it's my graduation week, and I can invite anybody I want in the world to talk at graduation, so why not the leader of our department? Why not the head of Marymount Physical Therapy? So really, I mean, when you ask, like, well, what do you want me to do? I have to write a speech? And I'm like, no, my show is really not about prepared speeches. But how long have you actually been teaching? Because you started at
Chapman. Well, I started at Texas Women, so that was an interesting environment because I was enrolled in the master's program in PT, but I already had a PhD, so I taught my own classmates, so that was really great.
They must have loved that.
They were actually very cool about it. Still good friends with a lot of them today.
What were you teaching your classmates?
Physiology. They also didn't like that I got out of some of the classes that they had to take. Like, I didn't have to take the research class, and there was a lot of like, oh, whatever, you have a PhD, and I was like, you should still have to sit here in this class.
Misery loves company.
Exactly. But it was great, and so I did that for 2 years and then moved on to Chapman, where I was core faculty there, and
West Coast,
yeah, so Orange, California.
Yeah.
Taught there for 3 years, and then we had to relocate to D.C., so I'm now in my ninth year at Marymount, so I guess that's 14 years.
So you've seen classes graduate.
Oh,
obviously.
I have seen classes graduate.
So we figured we'd come to you because this is our first run-through. No matter what you do in PT school, it's typically the first time you do it. And as long as PT school is in 3 years, it is pretty quick. And you know, we tell that to people all the time. I find myself telling it to first years now, this morning. I was talking to Miles in the gym, and he's just wrapping up his first year. I was like, dude, it goes quick. And he's like, yeah, I know. I'm like, I know, dude. You're dragging ass in your first year.
Right.
Trust me, you're going to blink. It's going to be end of your second year. You're going to go, oh, my God, I'm almost a third year. So you've seen many class graduates. So we're just looking for, what do you tell them? Or what do we have to look forward to in this thing that you always like to call the real world in PT?
Well, I think, you know, I have a couple of things that I have said over the years in different forms. The one thing that takes students by surprise that I say to them all the time that I actually heard in a different iteration this morning was, you're all about the finish line right now. You're like, we made it. We crossed the finish line, but you're really at the starting line.
Right.
So, you know, it's all about launching this new career. The day you get out there, you will figure out, wow, I didn't learn this in school.
Yeah.
So, you know, the biggest pearl of wisdom I can give to people is just live with intention. Think about why you came to PT school, because every day is going to be different and there's not going to be an answer that's sitting there right in front of you. But we're in a service profession, so you always have to go back to the core of that and just do whatever is best for your patients. You know, we should be humbled every day that we get this privilege to work with these patients. But, you know, go into work and go in there like you mean it. You know, you were here, you have gifts, you studied really hard, you paid a lot of money, and you spent a lot of blood, sweat, and tears doing this. I mean, if you think back on what you have all gone through in the past 3 years, you know, it's almost like going through a war of some sorts. It's like you bond with your classmates because it's traumatic. You know, you're taking a gross anatomy final one day after you're taking your first practical exam, and you have to look at your professor in a sports bra. I mean, what could be worse than that? You can say it in a lot of different ways. Remember where you came from, but really, what's at the heart of PT? It's caring about people, using the science that you learned, and really just trying to one person at a time make a difference.
Yeah. That's what PT is about. That's the one thing that I've noticed has separated PT from a lot of other fields, is that we get so much time with those patients. And we gotta cherish that, use that to our advantage. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I learned from a couple different CIs. Kim, I want to mention Kim Warzynski, great. Kevin Colley, Megan Davies Little. We get, you know, sometimes a half hour, sometimes if you're doing an eval, an hour, and that you can use that to your advantage and to gain little things that I did not think would be a big deal. I mean, they come up again and again in ortho and acute and neuro. They keep coming up. I'm like, I guess they're important. And then you go out to clinic and you realize they are. Trust. Your patient trusts you, they'll listen to what you say.
Absolutely.
Patient doesn't trust you, you're wasting your time, you're wasting their time.
Yeah.
So you've got to get that first, or else you got nothing. You mentioned an anatomy final. You taught us gross anatomy. You did something pretty funny during our anatomy final. You positioned one of the
third digit. The distal interphalangeal joint of the third digit. Put that as a what muscle attaches here, and I didn't get one person that looked up and laughed.
Out of 38 students, all professional PT students. I mean, you had a hand flipping the bird. You figured that would lighten us up, and none of us did, because that's what PT school does. Like,
yeah, it does.
Really, you're so myopic. You're tunnel vision. Because I consider myself a pretty relaxed guy, pretty loose. I didn't see it. Like, I didn't even think about it. I wasn't looking at a hand. I was like, what is she asking? I have 60 seconds. What is she asking here?
Right.
And that's sometimes, like, that's too much when we focus on it.
It's sort of like almost a disservice that we do to you when you're in school, is we make you focus on the minutia, but then you get out in the clinic and you're
big picture.
Completely like, oh my gosh, this is what they meant when they said look at the big picture. You know, something that I thought about tonight watching your presentation. So tonight was a nice little spotlight for the Virginia Physical Therapy Association. We spotlighted what I called PT hacks, and of course PT Pinecast is one of those. But I thought about, you know, I knew we were doing this interview and just sitting there listening to you guys, and I was like, what's something else that I would say? And it would be, live on the edge, right? So you do see your patients for an hour, 45 minutes, and they are putting all of their trust in you, and they're not going to fit into a perfect box. But sometimes seeing patients every day for an hour, you might see them three times a week. You might get a little bit bored. Live on the edge. What you might need to do with that patient might not exist out there. So make yourself feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Try something out, you know, and surround yourselves with people who are smarter than you. That is really humbling, and it's really makes you feel uncomfortable to do that, but that's probably the best piece of advice I could get people, to keep them engaged. Because if you're around people who constantly make you think, wow, I should know that, or that's a really good idea that I never would have came up with, that's how you make yourself better. But you know, it's a learned skill, because you've been a student forever and now you're going to be out working and you're like,
right,
I'm in charge,
right.
I should know what I'm doing, because I don't want anybody else in this clinic
to know
to
I
think
don't know.
I know what I don't know. Right.
So you're bringing thoughts in my head, name dropping. One thing was Lisa De Pasquale, which was somebody who came on our service trip and met G. And then as we're sitting in the bar, because all the best conversations happen at the bar, we're sitting at the bar at the end of that trip. She, of course, works a lot with EMGs. I've never met anybody who can rattle off the brachial plexus forwards, backwards, left and right like her. Sitting at the bar at the end of our trip, writes a $1,200 check, by the way. And I didn't say that on this podcast, or didn't really promote it, because she didn't. That's not why she did it. She definitely didn't write me a check in a bar in the middle of Costa Rica to get any press. I mean, we were in the middle of a jungle, and she goes, if you do this, I'll give you $1,200. And I said, I mean, you don't have to. I almost felt bad taking the money. She's like, I'll do it right now. And she's that kind of person, like tough as nails. And she did. You mentioned something else. And right now, so we had a VPTA meeting and we're at the after party. I usually say where we're recording the episodes. I didn't. We're at the Carpool, which is a great great dive bar if you're going to be in the Arlington area. And my roommate, David Fathakani, hacked. And that was the topic of discussion for like PT hacks. He hacked a vacuum cleaner into a wound vac in the middle of Costa Rica to try to heal a sacral ulcer. I mean, if we can all think like that, like you said, live on the edge. What can I do now? I know all our clinics are very, very nice. The carpets are clean, and we've got, you know, the dumbbells are all stacked up nice. But these are human beings, and you said not everybody's going to fit in a box. It's our job to live on the edge and to think outside that box, or we are doing them a disservice.
Yeah, so you just got to really be around people that push you to do that, because you can fall into a rut pretty easily.
How do you do that? And this is not to knock anybody at a clinic. I've worked at some great clinics. I worked at a place called Ortho Virginia, and it was that kind of a place. Everybody was super smart, but never made me feel stupid. Always open for me to ask a question, and would always say, you know, I just read, or I heard, or have you ever looked into? How do you do that when you graduate? I kind of feel like one of the answers, I'm just going to, I mean, a leading question is stay in touch with the APTA, because that's one way to do it, is a meeting we had tonight for the VPTA. What are some other ways we can do that? Because that's really important to prevent burnout, which is something I'm deathly afraid of already.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of things, and I'm certainly not an expert on this by any means, but got to be internal. When you step into the clinic every day, you are like, have to think to yourself, I am this patient's advocate. I'm the best shot this patient has. So if you kind of take on that responsibility, I think from the social justice perspective, it's a big driver of how you'll actually practice. I think you have to be really shrewd when you pick your clinic. You know, you have to go in, and there's a lot of formulas of how do you pick the best clinic? How do I pick my first job? And a lot of it's on your gut, to be honest with you. And, you know, there's no research that can really tell you that. But it's just, you know, are these people excited to come to work every day? And are they talking about things that are the latest and greatest? And I think some old geezers wouldn't agree with me, but I think social media is a great way to be able to connect with people and just see what they're talking about. So getting involved in some of the special interest groups.
Yeah.
I understand you guys are underneath crushing debt. A lot of those things are free. So, you know, just getting yourself out there and networking and meeting people and really just going out with the attitude of this is still the beginning. I have not yet defined myself. Like, yes, celebrate. You have finished school. You are done. You don't have to walk in those front doors anymore. But you are now having to master your trade. So what are you going to do to be able to master that?
It's scary to think that you mentioned being the patient's advocate. And I know when I did my last couple rotations, I would email you at the end of the day, or we'd have to do like reflections, and I'd be like, I don't know anything. And you're like, you know more than you think you know. That's like a couple weeks.
Absolutely.
That comes around though. I feel like I'm going to know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. And I say this to students a lot. It actually comes really quickly because
I hope so.
You know, what's the line? Help me out. With Spider-Man, right?
With great power comes great responsibility.
Responsibility, right? So I mean, you don't have anybody else to go to, right? You're it. I find the transition from a student to a practicing PT is very rapid and very quick because you take it so seriously, which is wonderful. It is a little unnerving because, you know, you're also starting to deal with like office politics, documentation, you know, scheduling, all those kinds of things. So it's a lot, but pretty much after a good 6 weeks, you're cruising, and you'll look back at yourself after 6 weeks and say, oh, I know a lot, you know, and students, unfortunately, you're under the microscope all the time.
Yeah.
So all you do is focus on the negative. I mean, I get course reviews, I could have 30 good ones and one bad one. All I think about is the bad one. But for me, that's good because that means I'm always trying to, you know, sharpen the knife. I don't just keep chopping the wood. You're graduating, you're passing the boards, like, you know something.
We gotta go pay some student loans. We'll be right back.
This episode powered by our friends at Strive Labs and the Strive Hub platform, the all-in-one customer relationship management platform built for health and wellness, providing intelligent solutions for clinics and hospitals using their patient portal, automation tools, and content management system to design custom care management workflows that drive improved patient outcomes, automate outreach, boost engagement, find loyal customers, and close the loop to manage customer retention, identify trends, and make changes that will grow your clinic. Find them online at strivelabs.com. That's strivelabs.com.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Podcast.
spot a good PT student.
Oh.
Been around for 14 years as a PT educator.
Yep.
We're also a practicing clinician, OCS. How do you spot someone? Because I remember walking in the room, first day of PT school, I was a radio DJ. I remember thinking, I'm in the room with 37 people who are way smarter than me. But you start to figure out, different people have different strengths.
Right.
But what makes a good PT student, or what should we work on more? I'm talking about not one specific student, obviously. I'm talking about, what do we pay attention to, not enough or too much?
I'm going to have a controversial answer to this, probably.
Right, I like that.
I think the best PT student is your solid B student.
Well, I'm in luck. B's get degrees.
Yeah. APTA put out this big marketing campaign, The Art and the Science of Caring. It's what it is. I mean, you know, in my tagline, I like to science the shit out of things, but like, I like to think I have a personality. It's like, you know, I could be the smartest person in the room, but if my patient doesn't want to divulge personal information to me or doesn't want me touching them because I'm so strange,
sober,
it's not going to work out. So I also find that students who are the solid B students, they know enough, but they have varied interests, so they're not spending 100% of their time in the books. They also tend to be able to converse with the patients a little bit easier. And actually, those are the ones that I find are trolling the internet looking for evidence on something that they're interested in. Or they may be reading research articles, they're just not the ones they're supposed to be reading for class. So I don't want to be known as the professor that like is promoting the B, but just from personal experience, those students usually I find they're more well-rounded. And they, you know, we talked about PT hacks. They get into a clinic and the A student who knew everything for the test and...
By the book.
Who could correct me on why the test question that I asked is wrong. They get into the clinic sometimes and they're a little bit paralyzed. They turn out to be good clinicians too, but it tends to be, from my experience, a little bit of a steeper learning curve because they're like, this patient is not exhibiting the signs or the symptoms that I learned about in school. I can't manage that.
Right.
So I think people who are more fluid thinkers do better. And what are PT students doing wrong? They're listening to us too much.
What does that mean?
Well, you know,
I think
PT educators need to come around a little bit. You know, we need to equip you with the tools to be safe to make mistakes. But all through PT school, you're worried about...
The grade. Getting kicked out.
And, you know, I realized that. You know, I had a really interesting conversation with a second-year student who said she was very raw. And she said to me, I value that you're telling me to relax, and I value that you're telling me it's not about the grade. But my whole entire life, you know, she said, you're interviewing 900 students for 38 slots. So she said, if I didn't have a 4.0...
I wouldn't be talking to you.
I wouldn't have got through the interview process. So she said, I can't just turn that off. So maybe you could tell me, what can I do to help students turn that off? Because the making mistakes is where you learn the most.
I agree. And I've said this before in this podcast. I've said it before ever coming to PT school. I'm the guy that needs to strike out. I'm the guy that needs to see 100 pitches before I get a good one. I'm the guy that needs to have 99 crappy ideas before I have my home run. I know that. But we do. When you put us in a bubble and say, everybody's got to be this, you know, 85 or better, you looking around the room going, crap, I gotta outdo this, because somebody here is gonna bust that curve, and I know we should relax, but the last thing you can tell someone to do is relax when they're stressed, because that's never gonna work. I think I'd have $1 million idea if I could figure that out.
I've seen a huge culture shift in my old age. You know,
it didn't always be that way. Like this.
No, I mean, granted, I did go to school with a classmate who braided the brachial plexus into her hair.
That's normal.
I wanted to sit behind her for the exam. It wasn't the same. We were helping each other, and I see you guys helping each other in labs and things like that. But it is that day where you get grades back. It is the who got the A. Oh, I got an A minus. And
you know,
why do people think if they got a 90% that's not good enough?
You know, for me, it wasn't that I didn't get the A. For me, it was like, I just want to make sure I'm supposed to be here. Because for me, it's my second career, and I'm looking around the room going, I just want to make sure I was supposed to be here. Make sure I did.
So you'll be the best patient advocate, right? I mean, you're not entitled. You're not walking around saying, of course I'm supposed to be here, and I know everything, and this patient should be lucky to have me. Being humble is completely underrated.
But I think a lot of students, they really do. I mean, I've told this story before. She doesn't mind me telling this, and she's standing behind you. You know, my classmate Amber cried one of our first weekends in school because she had a couple of beers and we're at a bar. But she was like, what if I miss something? And you got to appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She's focusing on the minutiae for the right reasons, because we don't want to miss anything, because we don't want to miss anything on a test. But we humanize things. I don't want to miss something for a patient, which is great quality to have. I don't know. That's a tough question you just asked me. How to fix it? I don't know. Because I, believe me, comfortable in improvisation situations and no problem presenting in front of 5,000 people. I go in for a neuro practical with Julie. My hands are sweaty. And I got cotton mouth, and I'm mumbling, and I have no idea who the hell I am because I'm not myself. But it's because I care about what I'm about to do, and I want to prove I paid attention for the last 2 weeks in class, I guess, and I want to make sure I measure up to my classmates. How to fix that, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we'll work on it.
Yeah.
I mean, PT school is almost like hazing if you think about it.
The whole time. Like day one, foundations, you're all going to palpate each other's pubic symphysis, and we're like, all right.
Yeah, we like to spiel it. If you palpate a pubic symphysis, it's always, you're going up from there.
That's
so.
What she said. You can do that. Nothing else is going to be awkward.
Right. It's like in orthopedics, we're like, palpate a transverse process. Because if you can do that, you know, you can palpate a patella anytime.
Right. You mentioned before being shrewd with how you pick your job. Any good questions to ask that you've come across or ways to tease out the culture of a clinic? I've heard, you know, stalk their website a little bit or follow people on the social media. That's a good way to get a glimpse. That's what we're doing right now. You know, mom and dad are coming to town, pomp and circumstance.
Again, not my expertise, although the only way I can comment on this is I moved to Washington, D.C. after living in California, and I went on about 20 job interviews.
Wow, that's a lot.
It was a lot, right? And I came out and I did the stink test. So I was like, if I raised my nostrils up in the air, I was like, not working there. I don't have any profound input other than I'm really big on retention. How long have they been working there?
Yeah.
Really observation. So I would go really early to my interviews and just sit in the waiting room and look around.
That's sneaky. I like that.
Well, you know, you gotta be incognito a little bit. You know, they're all wondering who the patient in the suit is, but you know.
Right.
But I mean, anything from how do people treat the office staff? I mean, same thing that you say like when you're with somebody on a first date, which is kind of what you're doing on a job interview, right? It's like, how do they treat the wait staff?
Right.
You can go for everything. Like, is it clean? Do they take pride in their work? You know, if everybody got a sourpuss on their face, you know.
Nobody wants to work there.
Right. These are things that I think we underestimate. If you can't see yourself working there.
Don't.
But you guys are, you know, you have this debt hanging over your head. So you're like, these people want to hire me. I don't know anything. Isn't this amazing? And too often, I think students take the first job they get offered because they don't have enough confidence in themselves to say, I should wait around, you know?
20's a lot, though. I mean, 20's a lot.
Yeah, I'm a little bit different. It was a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
In being in PT for as long as you have.
And I've been in and out the same clinic for 12 years.
That's a good sign. Yeah. So obviously the stink test works.
Stink test worked, yeah.
And being in PT as long as you've been, how's it changed? How's
God,
it stayed the same?
God, you're so
old. Well, 14 years is a good, I mean, that's how long I was in radio. I was in radio for 10 years.
Well, I didn't ever use, like, you know, I was never like a modality-driven PT, so I can't really say that. I'm not that old, right? I would say PT has changed in that we have a lot more evidence. So people are doing things in the clinic that actually have some sort of research behind them, which is good.
Well, that's what we want to know. Like, I mean, I said this to you in emails during my last clinical. I'm like, I don't even know if I'm helping this patient or I'm doing something because I'm supposed to be.
Right.
I'm like, am I helping this person or not? And you're like, well, what are you doing? And you know, does it have evidence? I'm like, yeah, but I don't see the change. And you go, well, then you try something else.
Yeah. Well, so that's part of the crutch as well, right? So we're more evidence-based, but we don't have enough people who are churning out the evidence. And, you know, another controversial statement is many DPT programs there are, we all change our research curriculum every year. And one of the things that we're finding is the more research we put in the curriculum, the less likely the students are to actually do research when they get out. You know, we switched over to case report, trying to help make students say, like, okay, if I just wrote about one really cool, innovative thing I did with one patient, maybe I could handle that.
Right.
But so people sometimes get hamstrung by the evidence. It's like, well, there's no evidence behind this. And I'm like, yeah, but maybe you're going to be the person that leads the evidence. So we have to always be promoting PT, advocating for PT, and thinking outside the box and making sure, right? So the luxury that we have is we get to see our patients so much that we can say, well, I tried that. That didn't really work a lot, you know? So taking a really good subjective, like, how exactly did you feel after you left last time? Like, you know, what were your mobility improvements or did your pain get worse, you know? So there's ways we can sort of tease that out without having to do a huge randomized control trial.
Well, we've talked about pendulums and things in terms of, because we're both run coaches for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, in terms of like barefoot running to the Hokas. You know, things swing both ways.
Yeah,
and
you
mentioned like evidence, and some people will just be so adamant against trying something because there's no evidence. But as you brought up, you might be the person who writes the case report who brings about the randomized control trial who eventually proves that thing you did that there was no evidence for now has evidence.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, what's the deal? I mean, I've seen it on you know, social media, Twitter, people get pissy. What's with that? I mean, I'm not looking for an answer. I'm really just throwing this out there. I don't think you'd have a precise answer for what's with everybody getting pissy. But is it always been like that, or is it just easier to be pissy because of social media and because you can cherry pick from the bleachers?
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword. I think you can get make a name for yourself really easily when you say controversial statements on social media. But I think everybody buys into the evidence. The problem is, how do we don't really train you. You're not trained to be a researcher, and you don't have time. Like, the way the medical system works now, like, how are you actually supposed to run a clinical trial?
Can't have it.
You know, some things that are on the horizon that they've been there for a while, but they're becoming bigger now, are rehab science degrees. So, like, you know, regenerative rehabilitation medicine is going to be amazing, but we need to have, like, the docs talking to the PTs, talking to the scientists. So, you know, I worked in a lab with mice for 6 years. I know a lot about science, and I try to bring it into the PT classroom, and I can tell you that the first three rows are sawing logs when I try to do that. So, you know, is it that we need to change the curriculum a little bit? But the prereqs that you guys come in with don't dictate that you need to be this heavy science curriculum. So we're going to see, I think, a lot of movement on this. I don't exactly know how it's going to play out yet.
I know I've been a better consumer of research anyway, just from the PT curriculum that we have at Marymount, is that first I was maybe a little bit not super interested in research.
Well, and that's one of the things we hope to teach you, right? So just be a critical consumer.
And now by the end of our 3 years, I was really thinking, I could definitely see myself participating in research. Mm-hmm. I hate writing all the numbers, man. It just makes me scared. Like, I'm like, I will find a very smart friend who likes research to do all the math and all the writing. But I think that's good. I think that only helps. Talking with Micah Miller from the Foundation for PT, which is, I think, that arm of our profession that's going to be pushing that research and making sure that there is a future for the profession. As long as there's research to back it up, I think we're okay.
Yeah, I mean, and you just brought up something, like, probably just, you know, right on the top of your head, but it's like, form a partnership or network. Unfortunately, scientists are always in silos because they're always worried about getting scooped. Like, oh my gosh, this person who's in Indiana might discover this molecule before I do, and they'll present it at a research presentation and I won't get credit for it. But we need to have more of an open door policy. So I was a perfect example. I was working on a gene that led to obesity, and I wanted to go to a physical therapy program and become a PT because I actually wanted to work with people. But you get so caught up in your own research focus. I mean, you're spending 6 years digging a hole a mile deep that you don't go wide at all. But right. If you could talk to someone who actually can give you some guidance on how this could translate, right, so translational science, into something that would actually help people, that would be fantastic. So you know how to put your hood on. That's my most important graduate message.
I don't have to put my hood on. You put my hood on for
oh,
me.
Oh, God, really? Okay, well, make sure that you hand it to me
I
the correct way.
I carry the hood up. You put it on me. I smile, wave at mom, and walk off stage.
All right, I'll work on that before next Friday.
I do want to say congratulations, because we're going to release 3 episodes this week. I want to say congratulations to everybody in the class of 2016. I think sometimes we start thinking about ourselves as the Marymount University class of 2016, or the University of Hartford, or Chapman, or Texas Women's. I think we're all going to go out there. We are the next generation of physical therapists. How scary is that?
It's not scary at all. It's super exciting, right? Because you guys have a totally different skill set than we have. That is what is going to propel us forward. We need this. We need Pinecast. We need marketing. We need enthusiasm. And we need grit. That is going to get physical therapy where it needs to go. It's not me. It's you. So kudos to the class of 2016.
Yeah. So congratulations to you guys. We'll be releasing episodes this week about graduation. So every episode is a pint. But before we're done with pints, we have shots. So your parting shot of wisdom.
For the class of 2016.
For the class of 2016. Yeah, let's make it specific. Let's make the shot for the class of 2016. What should we hear from Skye Donovan?
Clears before beers. Clear alcohol before beers. You won't get sick.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah. Go vodka before beer. Anything PT related?
Parting shot. Be humble. If you're humble, everything else will work out.
Short, sweet, and to the point. That's what a shot should be. Short and sweet.
Two things I am not. Short or sweet.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time out to share some wisdom on the PT Pinecast. I want to thank you for helping me through my 3 years of PT school. I almost said 4.
Absolutely.
I've only been here for 3, I swear.
It just feels like 4.
It feels like 4. But I'm pumped. I'm excited. I'm still a little nervous about being a PT, but I'll get over it, right?
That's good. It's good to be nervous.
This episode is produced by PT Pinecast, LLC, from Arlington, Virginia, with help from Tom Stormer of Marymount University, Molly Main from the University of Hartford, and Jimmy McKay from Marymount University.
Follow us on Twitter @PT Pinecast. and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.